Tantar Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents To Make Our World Anew, Volume 1, A History of African Americans to 1880 by Robin D.G. Kelly and Earl Lewis. Narrated by Terrence Kidd. Publisher's Note: This audiobook may refer to visual elements included in the print and ebook editions of the book. To you. To sit and dream. To sit and read. To sit and learn about the world outside our world of here and now. Our problem world. To dream of vast horizons of the soul through dreams made whole. Unfettered free. Help me. All you who are dreamers too. Help me make our world anew. I reach out my hands to you. Langston Hughes. Preface to Volume 1. Robin D.G. Kelly and Earl Lewis. The history of African Americans is nothing less than the dramatic saga of people attempting to remake the world. Brought to the Americas against their will as commodities to be bought and sold, Africans and their descendants struggled to change their conditions and thus turn the new world of their European masters upside down. Even when they did not succeed, the actions, thoughts, and dreams of Africans are responsible for some of the most profound economic, political, and cultural developments in the modern West. Black labor generated unprecedented wealth and helped give birth to capitalism. Black resistance slowly destroyed the system of slavery and prompted new methods of coercion and punishment. Black creativity influenced virtually all forms of Western art, from music and dance to theater and the plastic arts. Black visions of freedom and efforts to realize them not only transformed American politics, but inspired uprisings the world over, from South Africa to Tiananmen Square. Indeed, by invoking Langston Hughes's call to make the world anew, we recognize that African Americans historically understood their plight and their possibilities in global terms. For if this book demonstrates anything, it is that African Americans saw themselves as both Americans and part of a larger international black diaspora. To Make Our World Anew tells the story of the nation, but places the struggles and achievements of black people in a larger international framework. The history of African Americans begins on the African continent, a huge and varied land bounded by the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. It was home to people with different languages, traditions, histories, and religions. They called themselves Twi, Yoruba, Ethiopian, Zulu, Ashanti, and Kumba, among other names. Some lived in ancient kingdoms as old as the annals of recorded history, and others lived in small family groupings. Some worshipped one god, and others many gods. Some lived in societies headed by powerful men, and others by powerful women. Whether in cities or rural areas, whether Muslim, Christian, or other, the peoples of this amazing continent had long played a central role in world affairs. Egyptian advances in medicine, language, and architecture greatly influenced the Greek and Roman worlds. Gold from the Bura and bamboo goldfields of West Africa made its way into the Mediterranean world, where the accumulation of significant quantities enabled the merchants of Genoa, Italy, to underwrite European exploration and expansion. Likewise, notable learning centers like Timbuktu attracted visitors from Europe and the Orient and greatly enriched the Islamic world. The roles of Africans in world affairs changed significantly with the rise of the South Atlantic system. As European explorers made their way to the Americas, they expected to find streets paved with gold. The Americas were indeed rich in natural resources, but the bounty had to be excavated, cultivated, and processed. Labor was needed. The Europeans had already begun exploiting African labor on plantations in the Mediterranean and off the coast of West Africa, so the modern world's turn to Africa as a reservoir of slaves was not surprising. What followed was the forced migration and enslavement of several million Africans of varied ethnic backgrounds. Although scholars debate the exact numbers, it is understood that somewhere between 10 and 20 million people became part of the system of enslavement that ultimately led to the making of an African diaspora and African Americans. Many died in the trek from the interior to the coast, others during the wait for a slave ship, and scores of others during the harsh Middle Passage. Out of the crucible of their suffering was forged a new people, no longer simply Twi, Yoruba, Ashanti, or Kumba. In the Americas, they first became Africans and then African Americans. This process of people making is central to a complete understanding of African American history. To the countless numbers of Africans who survived the transatlantic journey and were forced to disembark at one of the many ports along the coast of Britain's North American colonies, what lay before them was indeed a strange new land. The seemingly infinite landscape, the cooler climate, the European settlers whose station in society ranged from vagabond to plantation owner, and their new neighbors, the native peoples who had occupied the land for centuries, were all unfamiliar to these new arrivals. More than the land itself, the relationships they entered into must have seemed especially peculiar. Although forms of bondage had existed in West and Central Africa long before the transatlantic slave trade, human beings were rarely the main commodity at the marketplace. Here, in the modern world, the enslaved African was inspected, assessed, auctioned, bought, sold, bartered, and treated in any manner her or his auctioner or owner saw fit. By the end of the 18th century, African slaves came to be property, pure and simple, and the color of their skin had everything to do with their unique status. This had not always been the case, however. During the first half of the 17th century, the planters and colonial administrators had few hard and fast rules about what it meant to be a slave. Some Africans were treated like European indentured servants and emancipated after a designated period of time. Others were slaves for life, but their children were born free. Over time, however, owners realized how valuable their investments were and proceeded to support laws that tightened the bonds of racial slavery, most notably laws that made African slavery an inherited condition and denied black people the most rudimentary human rights. The slaves did not always cooperate, however. They fought the masters and overseers, ran away, and made the business of commercial farming more difficult by not working efficiently. Some white indentured servants supported their fellow laborers, especially at the beginning of the 17th century. But as the laws changed and blackness became the primary mark of slavery, most poor white servants learned that the consequences of interracial solidarity had become much more severe. Being white, even a poor white, meant immunity from absolute slavery. Yet, in spite of their condition, enslaved Africans were still thinking and feeling human beings endowed with intellect, creativity, and vision. They came to these shores from various ethnic groups and speaking many languages, but through it all they forged a strong sense of community. Here in this strange new land, the Africans learned the English language and made it their own. They learned Christianity, if they had not before arrival, and transformed it. Others held fast to Islam or combined their own spiritual beliefs with the faith of the master. Sometimes the master's words served as their sharpest weapons, for all around them, especially into the late 18th century, they heard talk of liberty and freedom, of the rights of man. Not surprisingly, many enslaved Africans embraced the idea of liberty as a fundamental right, and some even presented petitions to colonial administrators insisting on their right to be free. But nobody had to read a declaration or treatise to have a yearning for freedom. Indeed, the slaves themselves authored the earliest declarations of freedom, and they were written in blood in the form of slave insurrections. The majority simply stole themselves to freedom. In the 150 years since their forced arrival in the 17th century, little exposed the contradiction between slavery and freedom for Africans as much as this nation's fight for independence from Great Britain. It was a contradiction many resolved to settle. Some, such as Crispus Attucks, joined with other colonists in striking direct blows for liberty. Others, meanwhile, heard the pleas for loyalty to the British crown, and with the promise of emancipation as their reward, remained faithful to the old order, only to see it vanish before them. But whether in the poems of Phyllis Wheatley, the legal action of Cook Walker, or the efforts of Paul Cuffey, Americans of African descent helped define what it meant to be revolutionary citizens. In fact, as the clamor for independence from Great Britain intensified, so too did the debate over slavery. Many who participated recognized that slavery remained a central form of labor in both the North and the South. Although a minority view, some American colonists favored emancipation. They ably pointed to the few blacks who purchased their freedom and gained an economic foothold before the 1760s. But in a land where dark skin signaled a subordinate social position, the few who lived as other than slaves represented the exception. For the enslaved, independence was not a philosophical debate. It stood as an alternative to permanent bondage. As a result, African Americans took a keen interest in public affairs. A small group of Africans in Massachusetts, for example, vigorously asserted their right to freedom, telling the Provisional House of Representatives so early as 1773. Such petitions increased in frequency and cogency after the Declaration of Independence. Others acted individually, suing their masters for manumission, and thereby insisting that they were citizens with the right to seek redress. And, after five generations on North American soil, the promise of freedom seemed tantalizingly close, so a few clung to the potential for British citizenship, trading loyalty to the crown for freedom. Irrespective of which side they supported, African people saw in the war an opportunity to escape slavery, pursuing different routes to possible full citizenship. The revolutionary era, however, did more than accelerate the push for freedom. It also midwifed the birth of a people called African Americans. In the crucible of the United States' birth, Africans claimed they too were Americans. They emphasized the role they played in building the infant nation and in securing its freedom. From their embrace of the religious awakening to the formation of independent institutions, they inserted themselves into the social and cultural life of the country. Ever aware of the implication of freedom, they spread word of their own efforts throughout the Americas and took pleasure as other members of the African diaspora liberated themselves in Haiti. The age of revolution ended with a tightening of the Southern slave regime, along with an intensification of resistance to slavery. As the Industrial Revolution got underway in the northeastern states and England, the market for cotton was more profitable than ever. And after inventor Eli Whitney created a machine that could easily remove the seeds from cotton balls, a slow and tedious chore slaves had to do by hand, plantation owners were able to grow even more cotton with fewer hands. However, they were not about to give up the slave system so easily. Even after the United States abolished the slave trade in 1808, plantation owners in the less fertile Upper South added a new twist to the business of human bondage by breeding their slaves like cattle and selling them to the growing cotton plantations of the South and Southwest. In the in-between zones of a harsh existence, many African Americans struggled to build lives of value and dignity. Men and women renamed themselves, expressed love for their children, engaged in local economy when and where possible, and generally refused to follow all of the directives handed down by masters. Some earned funds to purchase their own freedom and that of loved ones. They built churches and other institutions, and not only in the North after the gradual abolition of slavery between the 1780s and 1810s, but also in the South. And to the degree possible, they built the framework, if not the complete workings, of a community. This enabled men and women to live on rather than die off, to leave progeny determined to end the abominable condition called slavery. Not surprisingly, the African American struggle to be free and remain free in the United States clashed with the slaveholders' efforts to keep the system alive and profitable. Indeed, the central goal of free blacks in antebellum America, beyond their very survival as a people, was to fight for the complete abolition of slavery. And fight they did, often in concert with fellow slaves, sometimes in alliance with progressive white abolitionists, sometimes all alone. Free and enslaved African Americans, including notable figures like Gabriel Prosser, Denmark Vesey, and Nat Turner, attempted to launch slave rebellions. David Walker, Frederick Douglass, Maria Stewart, Henry Highland Garnett, and a host of others wrote militant books, pamphlets, and speeches calling for the abolition of slavery and condemning the United States for its hypocritical claim to being a land of the free. The clash between slaveholders and their opponents, most notably the slaves themselves, ultimately escalated into a full-scale war. The years of the Civil War and Reconstruction challenged the very foundations of American democracy and established the place of African Americans in that democracy. The war raised the intriguing question of whether a state or a collection of states had the right to leave the Union when residents felt their way of life was under attack. It eventually raised the question of whether a nation founded on the deep belief in freedom could deny those same rights and privileges to others because of a difference in color and status. Fundamentally, the years bound by the Civil War and Reconstruction raised extremely important questions about the place of African Americans in a newly reconstructed nation. When Southern forces fired on Fort Sumter, South Carolina in 1861, sparking a confrontation between the federal government and Southerners, the end of a way of life was at hand. The country had grown increasingly polarized over the issue of slavery. Some favored total abolition. Others simply wished to contain slavery, halting its further spread. Yet, after the war's start, and over the pleas of prominent African Americans such as Frederick Douglass, President Lincoln and members of Congress hesitated to make the struggle a referendum on slavery. Initially, Lincoln sought to reunite the country. But with growing pressures from some whites, after several important defeats, and in light of African American agitation, the freedom of African Americans became a paramount concern. The emancipation of slaves and the abolition of slavery were neither immediate nor universally applied. As important, a shift from slavery to freedom introduced a number of searching questions for Southern blacks. While the majority favored freedom over enslavement, a few feared such a dramatic change in status. Many, for example, ran away to join army units, where they encountered Northern blacks heading south to aid in their liberation. Others filled the contraband camps, so-called because fleeing slaves had no legal status and were considered contraband, that flanked Northern encampments. Even after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, blacks living in border states such as West Virginia were not freed until passage of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution in 1865. Still, a few blacks served in the Confederate Army, which is not surprising since a few blacks had been slave owners. When the war ended in 1865, many African Americans anticipated their inclusion into the nation's civic culture. With ratification of the 14th Amendment in 1868, which granted blacks citizenship, and the 15th, which extended the franchise, they were free and optimistic. Scores anxiously searched for family members sold during slavery. Others exercised their right to form labor associations and to build schools, churches, and other institutions. Families withdrew women and children from the labor force, thereby asserting a right to be treated as paid free labor. Although continued racial violence tempered some of this optimism, blacks voted and played an active role in the affairs of the nation. African Americans were free at last. They were finally full-fledged members of the Republic. So they thought. The slave went free, stood a brief moment in the sun, then moved back again toward slavery. This is how W.E.B. Du Bois, the great black scholar and activist, described the plight of black people in 1877, the year Reconstruction officially came to a close. Federal troops were withdrawn from the South. Freed slaves were not given the land promised them. White terrorist groups ran rampant, and the same defenders of slavery who led the Civil War against the North, returned to positions of power. It was a sad moment, for it marked the end of a decade and a half of effort to create a true democracy in the South. To Make Our World Anew, Volumes 1 and 2 are the product of a truly collective endeavor. We have combined the efforts of 11 leading historians who authored the original Young Oxford History of African Americans to produce the two-volume paperback edition. In this book, Colin A. Palmer authored the first chapter, the first passage, 1502 to 1619. Peter H. Wood wrote Strange New Land, 1618 to 1776. Daniel C. Littlefield, Revolutionary Citizens, 1776 to 1804. Deborah Gray White, Let My People Go, 1804 to 1860. And Nora Lee Frankel, Breaking the Chains, 1860 to 1880. Each of these authors deserves full credit as a co-author of To Make Our World Anew. Chapter 1. The First Passage, 1502 to 1619. Colin A. Palmer. Without exception, the contemporary societies of North and South America and the Caribbean include peoples of African descent. They form the numerical majority in the Caribbean, are about one half of Brazil's population, and make up a significant minority in the United States. In other countries, such as Canada, Mexico, Venezuela, and Colombia, blacks are present in smaller numbers. Regardless of the societies in which they live, these people share a common historical origin and ancestral homeland. Their experiences in the Americas have also been remarkably similar since the 16th century, when they began to arrive from Africa in ever-increasing numbers. Black Africans were brought as slaves into the Caribbean islands and the mainland colonies of Central and South America, first by the Spaniards and later by the Portuguese. Beginning in 1502, the slave trade gathered momentum as white colonists came to rely on this forced black labor. During the early years of the trade, Africans passed through Spain, where many remained, to the Americas. By 1518, however, a direct trade route from Africa to the Americas was introduced. Not all Africans in the Americas, even in the 16th century, served as slaves for the duration of their lives. Some managed to achieve their freedom. Others were born free. In 1617, the first town or settlement controlled by free blacks in the Americas was established in Mexico. This was a major development in black life in the Western Hemisphere. It was the first time that a group of Africans gained the right to live as free people. These pioneers had successfully thrown off the yoke of slavery through their own efforts, setting the stage for the eventual liberation of other enslaved Africans. But almost three centuries passed before this goal would be accomplished everywhere in the Americas. 2 years after this free Mexican town, San Lorenzo de los Negros, received its charter, about 20 Africans disembarked from a Dutch ship at Jamestown, Virginia. These people were the first Africans shipped to the new and permanent settlement that the English colonists had established in North America. They came 117 years after Africans were first enslaved in the Americas in Hispaniola. From Africa to the Americas. Modern archaeological research has established that Africa was the birthplace of human life. No precise date can be given for the emergence of early humans or the hominid species, but it may have taken place about 2 million years ago. The earliest of these hominid fossils were discovered at Lake Turkana in Kenya, at Old Duvai Gorge in Tanzania, and at the River Omo in Ethiopia. Consequently, it is possible to claim that East and Northeast Africa formed the cradle of human society. In time, over hundreds of thousands of years, early humans moved to other parts of Africa and to other continents. The first Africans were nomadic peoples, who made simple stone tools to aid them in their struggles for survival. With the passage of time, these tools became more sophisticated. The hand axe, for example, appeared around 1 million years ago. Its sharp cutting edges were more effective in the killing of prey than the earlier tools. Probably about 60,000 years ago, Africans started using fire. This development meant that meat could be cooked, and fire may have even been used to clear land for settlement or other purposes. Human life in Africa, or elsewhere for that matter, was always changing. The people developed new tools, moved around, and organized their lives and societies in a variety of ways. There was much diversity among the African peoples in terms of their culture and skin color. In northeastern Africa, for example, the people tended to be lighter in complexion than those who lived in the tropical areas. Much of this difference in skin color was a result of living in different climates. Individuals who lived in areas of intense heat and sunlight developed the kind of dark skin pigmentation that provided more effective protection against the ravages of heat and allowed them to survive. The black peoples of Africa, however, should not be characterized as belonging to a single race. In fact, many scholars have abandoned the use of the concept of race as a way of categorizing peoples. Skin color and other physical features do not reveal much about the genetic makeup of an individual or group. Two individuals with the same skin color and hair texture may be more genetically different from one another than they are from two persons with another pigmentation. For this reason, scholars have concluded that Africans, and other peoples as well, are so internally different that the old way of classifying people according to physical appearance or race is no longer useful. It is more useful to look at the African peoples according to language groupings. Different languages make up a family if their structures are basically similar. In most cases, the similarities in these languages result from the interaction among the speakers and the mutual borrowing of words. Using this method of studying languages, scholars have fitted the African peoples into five language families: the Afro-Asiatic family in North Africa, the Nilo-Saharan language is spoken in areas south and east of the Sahara and around the Nile River Valley, the Congo-Kordofanian family spoken in West and Central Africa, and the Khoisan group of languages spoken in Southern Africa and parts of East Africa. A sixth family, the Austronesian, is found in Madagascar, but is not native of Africa, having originated in Southeast Asia. African societies varied in the pace of their development and the nature of the changes that they experienced over time. Egypt, for example, was the first society to begin cultivating food crops, probably about 5,500 BC. Other societies followed. By 3,000 BC, the people living in the savanna were producing a variety of grains and yams. The development of agriculture made it possible to support larger populations and contributed to the rise of settlements. Throughout the continent, the people organized themselves in political units of various sizes and degrees of complexity. Egypt was the first great African civilization. Located in an area fertilized by the Nile River, Egypt made rapid strides in agriculture and commerce by 3000 BC. Before 3100 BC, however, several small states existed in the area. These political divisions came to an end when the states formed one kingdom ruled by the pharaohs. This national unity paved the way for an impressive civilization that would last for several centuries. Egyptian civilization was characterized by a hieroglyphic writing system, complex religious ideas, and monumental stone pyramids. Although historians disagree on this matter, it appears that the Egyptian peoples consisted of black Africans as well as lighter-skinned peoples from the Mediterranean area. Their civilization had a major impact on Greek culture and ultimately on Western civilization. Ancient Egypt is the best known of the early African societies, but it did not stand alone. Elsewhere, Africans developed a variety of states ranging from a few hundred people to larger kingdoms and empires. These states were not all alike. There were variations in their political and social structures, the nature of the power exercised by the rulers, their religions, and so on. Many Africans believed that the authority and power of their ruler derived from the gods. Most of these societies had their own bureaucracies, taxation systems, and armed forces. Some of the best-known states and empires were located in the western and central Sudan.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?